Welcome to the Launch Hour with Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry.
Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting here from our studios in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you doing today?
Fantastic, Ron. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing just as good as you. Well, you know, Bill, on Launch, we focus on the launching of a business so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch, before, during, and after. Today we're going to be featuring Mark Garcia of CMG Media Group International. But before we get started, Bill, can you thank today's sponsor?
I sure will, Ron. Today our sponsor is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for your success.
And we really appreciate their support. Well, you know, Mark Garcia is the author of the book, How to Become a Rockstar Chef. And he's also the co-author of Entrepreneurial Insanity in the Restaurant Business. He's a highly acclaimed culinary innovator and business consultant. And he also is engaged in marketing and selling physical product services and how-to information online since 1999. And he's been creating and consulting with clients on internet marketing since 2005. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate you having me here. This is exciting. As I was listening to that introduction, I was like, wow, who's that person? I'm anxious to hear what they have to say.
That's right. Well, Mark, you know, could you, for our listeners, could you define creativity and innovation and why paying attention to it can lead to success in business?
You betcha. Well, those are kind of the two buzzwords. As you mentioned, I do have clients in both the Fortune 500 as well as small business owners and entrepreneurs. And creativity, innovation, those have been kind of the hot topics lately that folks like to throw around when they're trying to figure out how to better market or come up with products for their business or how to increase business. And there's a subtle difference between the two. You know, creativity is something that you have to create in an environment for. You can't schedule a meeting next Tuesday and rally the troops and say, hey, we're going to have a meeting on creativity. Let's come up with some great ideas. That's part of it. The innovation, and where I separate the two words, is innovation is actually taking the creative process, but then also putting the tactical, kind of, you know, blocking and tackling, bricks and mortar, free throws and layups, whatever analogy you want to use, and taking those creative ideas and applying them to your business and actually following through with trying one or several of them to help move your business forward.
You know, Mark, regarding the creativity and innovation, how do they relate to a business owner or someone working for a large company?
Great idea. So we'll do the great question. We'll do the business owner first. So 2011, we're talking right now, things have changed drastically in the marketplace. Doing the same old things just simply don't work. There's either too much increased competition or pressure on price, or the internet has changed so much of the way a traditional maybe brick and mortar business has to operate. So for the small business owner, he or she has really got to think of new ways to either get new market share, get new customers, or engage and market to those customers who are increasingly more and more online or using social media or other mobile content platforms, which we'll talk about a little bit later. For someone working in a large corporation, very similar. If you're an employee of a large corporation, you are your brand. You are your own stock. And how do you separate and stand out and be more, develop more contribution to your company than someone else? I mean, companies are trying to get more and more done with less and less resources. So the pressure for people to perform is probably greater than ever. I think in the old days, in a large company, you could kind of skate by if you were a mediocre employee or weren't contributing as much maybe to a bottom line result in a company. Not anymore. Everyone's being evaluated constantly. So the way in which creativity and innovation come in there is all businesses have challenges and problems. How are we engaging to figure those out? And what I mean, not just pointing out the problem, because heck, all of us on the phone can point out a problem, but the real people who make a difference, the real contributors, are the ones who come up with a or several solutions to a potential problem, or they see ways to maybe engage and increase business in a different way. Does that make sense?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes real good sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right about in the old days, you could just kind of skate along because we had some people, you know, at the corporation where I worked for 32 years that we said they just were just kind of warming a chair. And we actually had one group of people that we actually called it the RIP group. Because they were older, but the RIP stood for retired in place.
I just going to comment on that. Probably where I learned this the most, there's several large retailers, and you know some of them. One of them is based down in Bentonville, Arkansas. But they were some of the most results-driven companies. It really changes your mindset. It was almost as if you had to justify your existence on a daily and weekly basis. Now, some people aren't built for that, and a lot of folks ended up leaving the company. But you want to talk about making you on top of your game, which really, if you think about it, is the way it should be. Hey, if I don't perform, I'm gone. Like you said, the days of these RIP employees, no small business owner can afford to have that type of that type of dead weight on their team. You just can't. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, can you give us some examples of creativity and innovation that you've seen or developed in a work environment?
Sure, and sometimes I think creativity has this this really sexy sound, and people think it's like, oh my gosh, they've come up with the next new widget that we're going to introduce, like Apple. Those guys are creative. They came up with game-changing products or services that really changed the marketplace. And yes, creativity and a culture of innovation led to those design products. But sometimes it's just as simple as, an insurance company putting a lot of their forms online so that it cuts down on paper, cuts down on labor to fill out forms, and it's an easier experience for both the customer and for the company. So I always kind of caution that creativity and innovation sometimes don't need to, it doesn't always have to be these outlandish, grandiose projects. Sometimes it's just figuring out a better way to serve the customer or to produce a product or to engage better in the marketplace. So some good examples, one I gave you, the insurance one. A lot of times, creativity and innovation come from just getting the right people talking to each other. I work with a lot of retailers, so shipping and transportation are big challenges in their marketplace because that's where they can compete, and the better ones that actually engage all the people that touch the process helps make the process work better. Imagine that. I mean, some of this is just common sense, but imagine that. You get people who are involved in getting products out to your customers. You get them in a room to talk about challenges that they all face and how they can make it better. I know, mind-boggling stuff I'm sharing here, but great successes with some of those things that translate into real-world dollars and cents.
A lot of times things are just, they're just so basic, you sometimes don't think about it, I think.
You're right. Now, as I said, there's times when game-changing products or services like what Apple has done come along where you're like, holy cow, these guys, they got some of the smartest, most creative people in the room. But I'd say 80% of the things that make a difference are exactly like you talked about. They're the basics. They're common sense. Mm-hmm. They're, blocking and tackling.
Right. Mark, what kind of steps would an entrepreneur take to create a culture of creativity or innovation in their business?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. So creativity and innovation, it's a dual-edged sword. What I mean by that is you have to create the culture where people are thinking about the business or wanting to improve every step of the way. We had talked a little bit earlier about my background. I am a professional chef, and it's interesting. In the kitchen, it's just a natural part of chef work, I guess, is that you're always looking, how can I do this quicker, better, faster, easier? Just because you have so much work to do in very confined spaces sometimes, it's just part of your natural workflow. I'm trying to think how to do things better. So entrepreneurs, I think, especially being very creative individuals, are always thinking how they can make things better. When that translates into your team or your staff on board your company, they've got to feel safe that they can come up with ideas. 60% of them probably won't ever work, Ron, or don't make sense, but at least they're constantly thinking. It's kind of like in copywriting. You write 100 different headlines to find two that really work. It's the same thing in creativity. You've got to create that culture where people feel it's okay to come up with ideas no matter how outlandish, and they're not going to get shot down right away with, oh, that won't work. Oh, we've tried that before. Oh, what are you thinking? That doesn't apply. People have to feel safe to be able to come to you, the team, with ideas. Now, more importantly, if something does have an idea or traction, they've got to feel comfortable that they're going to get a shot to at least see this thing implemented, test it, and find out if it's going to work or not work. If it doesn't, they don't get clubbed over the head because something didn't work out. That really stifles people from wanting to speak up or come to a group or an organization with new ideas if they say, shoot, the last time I came up with something, it failed right away, and I got my head handed to me on a platter. I'm never going to do that again. So now they just become kind of like those RIP employees you mentioned, just trying to do enough to get by and not get fired.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, sometimes the failure is not really a failure. Can you describe that in terms of innovation?
You betcha. Some of the best examples we've all heard from corporate America, the Post-it note. They never designed that product start to finish. It turned out that they were trying to come up with a portable adhesive that was temporary, and it failed in its original intent, but Post-it notes came out of it. You know, corporate America's got examples like that all over, where the original intent or the original idea of what they were trying to create, something entirely new and different came out of that process. Velcro is another one. People said, oh my gosh, it doesn't work. Look, it's temporary. This thing doesn't stick together. Well, how many things do we have, now in the marketplace that have Velcro? So you're absolutely right. Sometimes things aren't a failure, and that kind of goes back to that creating a culture of innovation. It's like what did Edison say? I didn't fail. I found, 9,900 and some odd items that don't work in a light bulb. Well, it's kind of the same thing here. If you evaluate every new idea or process or technique or innovation idea that comes up, you're always going to learn something, so it's never a complete failure, because if nothing else, it's at least showed you something that you've proven doesn't work that may send your mind and your creative team in a different direction.
Yeah, I have a friend that says he fails forward.
Well, it is so true. Mm-hmm. Now, how many mantras in corporate America is that spoken? But then you go ask people, well, how come we're not trying more ideas? Because they're like, well, the last time we failed, yeah, I see the big fail forward, and let's be innovative and let's be creative. Right. And they have all the mission statements on the wall. But the reality is, my boss pulled me aside after the meeting and said, we can't have any more failures like that. So people feel, they're intimidated to fail and do forward. But you're absolutely right. It's that whole ready, fire, aim, fail forward, and any other metaphor you can come up with. I go back to cooking because that's probably my mindset. Not every recipe dish we come up with works. We don't go cry in the soup and, say, oh my gosh, I'm a failure, I'll never be able to cook again. We just say, okay, well, that recipe, that special didn't work tonight. But every once in a while, you find one that just resonates with the consumer, and that becomes something that your restaurant is known for. And oftentimes, it just started out as a special. We talk about the 3M products or the Velcro Caesar salad, one of the most just iconic names, recipes that's out there. Started out not as a mistake, but basically that's all the ingredients that the kitchen had on hand, so they created a dressing. It wasn't, a thought-out process. It was just they were adaptive, and look how it became. It's like, oh, my gosh, it's one of the most famous dressings out there.
Uh-huh. Mark, you mentioned your book.
Said the same, oh.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Mark, you mentioned in your book How to Be a Rockstar Chef about working smarter, not harder. Tell our listeners what you mean by that.
I'm chuckling because, again, how many of us have heard that? It's an old saying, work smarter, not harder. But then how many times do you see, whether in personal life or professional life, that we're sometimes trying to reinvent the wheel, or we're working on things that we have previous experience just didn't work out, but we think, well, if we try it different today, maybe the results will be different. There's, again, I'll use the cooking metaphors, planning your work and working your plan. When you work in the hotel business or banquet business, you've got a fixed number of guests that are coming in. You know how much food you should be preparing, plus or minus. And then you very methodically do steps one at a time. I'll give you a good example. Let's say we're going to cut fruit. Well, I don't take each pineapple, each cantaloupe, each watermelon and cut them up. I take all of them and do it at once, because there's efficiency in working on one task at a time to completion instead of trying to do it all at once. So that's probably the simplest example I can give from a culinary perspective. In business, there's probably a half dozen or so things, whether you're a small business owner, entrepreneur, or a large company, that you need to really be paying attention on. They're the things that either drive sales, service the customer, are some way connected in operations, and then detail out in finance to some degree. So by paying attention to kind of those five or six basics and not 100 other things, that's making you work smarter. It's, the old 80-20 rule applies here. Are we working on the right things that impact my business, either my customers or my bottom line results?
Well, using the example of, doing all the pineapples at one time, what's your top three suggestions for time management or maximizing your productivity?
I love this question. I love talking about that, especially with, your audience. I think you mentioned we have a lot of business owners, entrepreneurs on the phone. And I'm the consummate entrepreneur with ADD. I mean, I'm start me on a project. A minute later, I want to go be working on something else. and it's easy for me to get distracted 100 different ways. So I've had to really find these keys to help me be much more efficient with my time and productivity. So what my biggest suggestions would be, again, concentrating on for the day 3 to 5 top things, no more. You know, how many of us have built these extremely long to-do lists because we somehow think that we're going to be more productive if we get 15 things done? The reality is, if you got 3 done during the day, you'd be much more efficient and ahead of the game than trying to get 15 where you really only cross off 1 or 2 a day and they keep carrying over to the next day. So I would say picking the 3 or 5 top things that you know are going to impact your business, whether that's operations, marketing, sales, finance, or production, and concentrating on those. The other thing I've found, Ron, is working in 90-minute bursts. What I mean by that, if you really, and there's studies out there that prove this, if you really look at the traditional workday and you focus on how much time is actually spent doing the productive work, not answering emails, not shuffling papers on the desk, not doing the social conversations, but really focusing on the time spent on those activities, if you can work in uninterrupted 60 to 90-minute bursts 2-3 times throughout the day, you'll get more accomplished in a week than most people get accomplished in a month, sometimes even a quarter, because it's laser-guided focus on the right things, and you're also building in time for, okay, my bandwidth, my brain, my focus can only concentrate on this task or these tasks for 60 to 90 minutes. After that, that's when you get up and walk around or go socialize or shuffle and check emails or return phone calls. But if you have those 60 to 90-minute burst blocks of time, you'll get so much more done. And then the last thing is you've got to have the pig-headed determination and discipline to only focus on those things. Again, I go back to creators because I'm one of them. Ron, I think you are as well. Bill, we haven't met yet, but I'm sure probably some of this is applying. You're kind of chuckling to yourself. How often do we get distracted on the things that we're doing? You know, the shiny metal object, I call it, off in the distance, is just beckoning us. You know, how many of us have an email alert on our computer, so we're working on great things on the computer. All of a sudden, the little buzzer or the bell goes off, and there's an email. Oh, well, of course, I have to go check that. So having that pig-headed discipline and determination to stay focused and not be distracted, you know, in my offices, my staff knows that when I'm in those 90-minute blocks, short of the building being on fire or an emergency with my daughter, I'm not to be interrupted. There's nothing that can't wait an hour for me to get, you know, in front of you with.
Yeah, I always laughed about when I worked in offices where someone would come up to your door, and if you had your door open, they'd knock on the door and say, are you busy?
Right, you know? Yeah. You got a minute. In corporate America, that robs people of so many great ideas and time management. The got a minute can eat up your whole entire day because think about it. I mean, Bill, you've got to stop what you are doing, kind of change your focus because you want to be there for the person that came in. Right. Those 5 minutes are never 5 minutes. I don't care what anybody says. But then you've got to gear back up to that same focus level you were at. And it's just, it's hard for us to do. I can't do it very well. So my staff knows, and that's why I close my doors during those times. If my door's closed, again, there's no interruption. And I get so much done, and I actually feel better. Even if I only had one 90-minute block that was productive for the day, I know that I got more done that day than most people would get who spend 8 or 10 hours at the office or at the desk. So I'm okay with that. I don't have the guilt factor the next day because we all know life happens, stuff comes up. But again, if you even had just one of those blocks throughout your workday, you would be able to move your business forward because think about that over the cumulative effect of a day, a week, a month.
Yeah, it's very true. You know, Mark, in your seminars, you speak about how leaders, managers, and owners have to really own their strategy. What do you mean by that?
Okay, so in my seminars, you're absolutely right, and we get folks from all walks of life, from my presentations or guests that come out of corporate America, Fortune 500 companies, small entrepreneurs, medium-sized entrepreneurs. What I mean by the owner has to own the strategy, it's, again, so many metaphors. We all have to be singing out of the same hymnal. Hey, there can only be one leader that's taking the charge of where the troops are going. The owner has to set, live, and breathe the strategy, whatever it is. Because sometimes the leader, the owner, the entrepreneur is going to see the vision of where the business is going way before the line staff will see it. So yes, in the meetings and in public, they'll nod their heads, they'll cheer and say, yep, this is the right thing to do. As soon as that meeting's over, they walk out and go, he's crazy. What the hell is he thinking? So the owner's got to kind of believe before they see it and have that that passion, that determination that, hey, trust me, I may not see it all the ways to get there, but I know this is where we need to be. We're going to figure out together how to get there. And the folks that they work with need to kind of sense that that security, that knowledge that, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't see what's on the horizon, but he or she sure believes where we're going, and I believe in them and trust in them, so we're going to get there. They can't for a moment sense that you have that fear of the unknown. You know, think back to when Columbus came. Okay, I promise we're heading out on this ocean. There's going to be land on the other side of that. If he for a moment showed his folks and his crew on board that, well, I don't know where we're going to go. We may get there. We may not. You know, how many people would have continued on that voyage versus throwing him overboard and saying, we're going back home? Very true. And we laugh about that because that happens in business all the time. I mean, people on your team, if they even sense for the moment that you're fudging or that you don't really believe that the strategy of what we're trying to accomplish is achievable or is the right thing to do for the business, they'll never give you their best. They'll, you know, be a little passive-aggressive. They'll do what you ask them, but they won't be fully engaged. And today, dynamic teams in the workplace need to be fully engaged with the message, the strategy. They don't necessarily have to always agree with it, but they got to at least know that, okay, I may not fully understand where we're going, but I trust in the leader that we're going in the right direction.
I always thought I was a good actor, and we just had the Houseware show this past week, and one of the guys that works for me was demonstrating one of our products, and he was demonstrating it on another product that I wasn't 100% sure it was going to work, and he was doing it in front of the Costco buyer, and I always thought I was a good actor, but the gal that has known me for a very long time and, you know, I guess has really looked at how I respond and interact, she said, Bill, when that started happening, you had absolute fear all over your face because I didn't know if it was going to work.
See, there's a perfect example. We just, as humans at a subconscious level, we can pick that up. And, I mean, and it's not just, you know, at the mid-management level. I'm a business geek. I love reading business books or biographies. And, again, I'll come back to Steve Jobs and Apple. When you read some of the recap of the meetings he had where he was pushing the engineer and the creative teams to design basically products and stuff that didn't exist, and, oh, by the way, we got to do it in X amount of time, you know, the people on the team have got to believe that, holy cow, in the physical known universe we live in, that's not possible, but I believe because, holy cow, is he passionate about that message, we're going to figure out how to get there. You know, think about some of the products that we just take for granted exist. I mean, before the iPhone came out, tell me that wasn't a game changer, or the iPad. You know, where did that idea and that thought and that strategy come from? You know, by him saying, hey, we're going to revolutionize the phone business. Well, what? You're in the computer business. What the hell do you know about phones? I don't know, but we're going to figure it out.
Yeah, and, you know, and going back in history, I can't remember if it was the V6 engine or the V8. I forget who the owner of the company was that had his engineers locked up and told him that he wanted that kind of engine, and all they'd had before, you know, was just a straight six-cylinder engine. And they kept telling him, it can't be done, it can't be done. He says, look, guys, you are not leaving this room, okay? You're going to come here every day until you give me a V8. And finally, you know, they figured out the sequence of the firing of everything in order to make a V8 work and the engine not, you know, roll over on one side. You know?
Now, great example there, great example. So had the leader of the organization, the business owner, not had the ownership of that strategy, how easy would it have been for him to be, or her, to be swayed by very smart people in the room? Again, not necessarily the most creative or innovative, perhaps in a strategic sense, but how easily would it have been for engineers to come up with reams of documentation about why a V6 won't work, can't work, shouldn't work, defies the laws of gravity? Had the business owner not been there to say, look, I don't know, figure it out.
That's right. Well, Mark, tell us about your 7 must-have ingredients in your marketing for success recipe and why people need to know about them.
Well, marketing, again, is kind of like creativity and innovation. It's one of those words that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Again, being just a student of business and watching great marketing programs, and marketing does tie into the strategy that any company is going to have. And I think marketing over time, especially now, it's becoming even more intrusive into our marketplace. We've almost become, as consumers and as humans, we've almost become anesthetized because we're marketed so much to. I'll give you a good example. I was filling up gas this morning in my car. There were 17 different marketing messages just in me filling up my gas. Now, not all of them applied because half the products that they were marketing, I'm not even looking for or I'm not that demographic for, yet I'm still being marketed to. So I think as business owners and entrepreneurs, we've got to really think more strategically and more innovatively in our marketing messages. So a couple, the seven items that I, whenever I'm working with clients or teaching at my seminars or even in some of my marketing books, is your content has to be engaging. And we're going to talk about online and offline marketing, so I'll separate those when those come out. But on both arenas, you have to have engaging content. You know, that classic conversation that's going on in the consumer's mind of so what or why should this apply, your marketing needs to kind of answer those questions before they even have a chance to bring those questions up or that resistance up. I always like to say you've got to have in your marketing content that serves, you know, that we make the best, we're number one, we were voted this. Again, it all goes back to those platitudes. It just sounds like noise. It sounds like that Peanuts character of the teacher, you know, the horn just going, wah, 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 wah. So tell me something different about you. Tell me something more human. Give me content that's engaging, whether that's online or offline. I think that when you are giving your message out, whether it's in print, on we'll call radio, TV, video, something that where there's a physical form or on audio through the radio, I've got to sense some passion for your company or your product. I tell a lot of restaurateurs, you know, when they are doing their radio spots, that sounds great, but how is that different from the six different restaurants I drive past on the way to get to you? Or when I'm working with hotels or retailers, it's kind of the same thing. You know, what grocery store you go to, they pretty much have all the same products at pretty much the same price. So what makes the difference? If I sense a passion in the message or passion in the messenger, I'm going to pay attention a little bit more. And also, and this kind of ties in, the third step ties into the whole content and not having just look at me advertising, but is the marketing, is the message you're getting across, does it somehow serve a need that I as a customer have? Are you trying to make me a hero at home, let's say, if you're in a grocery store selling new food ingredients or new recipes? You know, give me something that helps make my life be better, not just something that helps you make a sale. And I think that's a real change in the way traditionally we've advertised in this country. And again, all of these things so far apply to online or offline. Another must-have ingredient in your marketing message. A lot of these things apply online more so than offline. So obviously the video you heard me talk about. Customers want to engage a lot more with a brand or companies or individuals that they seek with. Video is a great tool to have in your toolbox, let's say, that people can make. It makes you more human. It doesn't make you like every other company that's out there. And again, that seems to work very well for my restaurant and retail clients. But you're seeing more and more of the Fortune 500 and the large corporations. They're trying to humanize their brand, if you will. They're trying to engage in some of these different platforms online, such as social media and other places, to give their brand a human face or a personality where they didn't have before. You know, if you look at most of the television commercials that are very successful, a lot of them have that character or that person or a human side to them that makes them funny. You know, think about Geico Insurance. I mean, how boring is insurance? But that quirky, you know, spokesperson that they have, she kind of makes it fun and brings an element of humanness to it. There's a lesson in there, I think, for a lot of business owners that your marketing has to have some element of that. Another ingredient that I think we all forget about in this digital age is we're so focused on the internet. But you know what? Offline marketing still works. The traditional, you know, postcards, the traditional newspaper, the traditional local community newspaper or church bulletin, they still work. Nobody's paying attention to those because, you know, the internet's sexy and we can do a website and we can do a video page and we can do a Facebook page. Yes, that's part of your marketing plan and should be there, but let's not forget the offline world, that there's still people who like to touch and read something and hold it, in their hands. And the biggest one, number seven, this is huge. We're a little bit behind in this country compared to the rest of the world, but mobile phones, mobile computing devices, that is where everyone must have a presence on, so that's got to be a part of your marketing strategy. You know, we're accessing more and more data through our smartphones. I think for the first time, data showed this past year that more people are accessing the internet or content through their smartphones than on traditional desktop computers. a lot of folks, a lot of business owners aren't sure. They're like, well, what's the difference? If I create a website, it's the same for a phone or for a computer, isn't it? Well, no, and you better find out. You better look at your website, your marketing messages online on both a laptop, a computer, an iPad, and your mobile phone, because the experience to the customer is completely different on each of those items. And if you haven't engineered or created your site to be functional on those different platforms, you're in trouble. But also think about this, the technology where mobile phones are going, I'll use a good example from the restaurant side of it. So I have a client, we're helping them get some of their recipes and famous dishes online. Some of their customers want to create or attempt to create those recipes at home. Well, they've created an app where you're in the grocery store and they're working with a couple of the large consumer product group companies that when you go either take a picture of the scan code or you're actually in the aisle, it'll recognize that you're looking at their product and it'll download you the recipe or a small video while you're right there in the grocery store so that you're kind of reminded of the content and how to do it when you're actually at the place where you would buy the ingredients. That's huge. That's a game changer. That's something that wasn't available, heck, 2-3 years ago. But now that messages and marketing is mobile and people are accessing more online, we as business owners and entrepreneurs have to really focus on how do we tap into that customer? How are they, you know, getting their messages when they're on their way to work or when they're traveling on the subway or when they're in between appointments and they're not at their desktop? It's a completely different experience. And again, I go back to Europe, especially China and Japan, well, at least before the floods and the devastation they're having there, they had some of the most innovative wireless and smartphone technologies for marketing messages that I've ever seen. And we're just now starting to get those here in the States.
Absolutely incredible. Well, Mark, this has been super. You know, how can our listeners get in touch with you?
Well, if they go to my website, www.chefmarkgarcia.com, there's information on how to reach out to me either through the phone or through email. There's some great articles and content that we post on the site. A lot of the things that I discussed with both of you today, I talk about a little bit more in depth, but that's the best way to reach out and, again, be part of some of these tips and things that we discussed this morning.
Okay, that's great. Well, thanks so much for being on the show today, Mark. Our listeners really appreciate you sharing your experiences and insights. This has been great.
Well, good. Ron, Bill, I appreciate that, and I hope your audience has found some things that maybe it'll help them think about things a little bit different, and hopefully it's helped serve them a little bit on some new ideas to implement.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, another great show, Bill.
It really was, Ron. We'll have to have Mark on some other time to talk about cooking, because I, as you know, I love to cook, so I can pick up some pointers from Mark, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I'd love it.
I also want to give a special thanks today to our sponsor, Patents and More, your trusted guide through the innovation jungle.
And you can go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen again to today's show, plus previous shows. This is Ron Reardon and Bill McHenry signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.